Hey there, it's Kona Gallagher, host of And Then They Were Gone and Day by Day True Crime Stories, and I'm here to bring you an amazing opportunity to win some incredible prizes, all for a good cause. Join the Texas Advocacy Project's The Big Game Football Squares Raffle on February 9th, 2025, and help support survivors of power-based abuse. For every $100 donation, you secure a square and a chance to win amazing prizes. You can choose from two exciting grids. The Hawaiian Paradise Grid offers a grand prize of a seven-night stay for two at a luxury resort in Oahu or the Big Island. Or play the Beachfront Mexico Grid for a chance to win a four-night, all-inclusive stay for two at a five-star Marival Luxury Resort in Banderas Bay or Nuevo Nayarit, Mexico. Your contributions help survivors understand their rights, navigate the justice system, and secure emergency protective orders. To participate, visit TexasAdvocacyProject.org and select your grid today. Don't miss out. Tune in to the Texas Advocacy Project's Facebook page on February 9th, 2025, during the game for live updates on winners. Prizes are awarded at the end of each quarter, with the grand prize at the game's conclusion. So score big for a cause. Visit TexasAdvocacyProject.org to learn more.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
When 17-year-old Brianna Maitland didn't make it home after her shift as a dishwasher at the Black Lantern Inn in Montgomery, Vermont, it took nearly a week before police started an investigation. While Brianna was initially dismissed as a troubled runaway, her family knew that something much worse had happened to her. Tips began pouring in, along with the rumors that you typically find in small towns. But one rumor in particular seemed to have some weight: that Brianna was being held against her will in a nearby farmhouse. This tip led to a police raid, but while arrests were made, Brianna remained missing. Was this tip a dead end, or could it still hold some clues even 20 years later? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Brianna Maitland. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again, either a week later or a little bit later. I don't know how long it's going to take me to get this part up. I'm going to be working so hard.
It's a little bit later for us.
It is a little bit later for us. I'm Kona.
I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode, and he is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home.
And hopefully I don't ramble too much.
Hopefully. Well, I edit it out. It's fine. But we're going to get right into it this week, because this is part two of the Brianna Maitland story. So if you haven't listened to part one, it is directly below this episode in your podcast app. I highly recommend that you listen to that one first, as we talk about Brianna as a person and the circumstances surrounding her disappearance. This week, we're going to start out by talking about the farmhouse raid and the tentacles that continue to reach out from it for years.
I'm envisioning the octopus now.
I know. We did just watch that on Netflix.
Yeah.
This is less political, but we will take you all the way up to the very week of this recording, which marks the 20th anniversary of Brianna Maitland's disappearance. When we left off, an anonymous caller said that Brianna was being held against her will in the basement of a farmhouse on Reservoir Road in Berkshire, about 10 miles away from where her car was found. Two men, Ramon Ryans and Nathaniel Jackson, were renting the house at the time. They were drug dealers from New York who would go up to Vermont to sell drugs. According to police and other people who have been interviewed about Brianna's story, there was a fairly substantial drug problem in the area at that time. I mean, to the point where drug dealers thought they would make more money by going to Vermont instead of staying in New York.
Sure. New market.
Yeah. I mean, rural area, not much else to do.
Probably cheap hotels.
Yeah, I don't know. Or this farmhouse, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, it probably didn't cost them a whole lot to get up there and bring their wares with them.
So this is the world that Brianna had been involved in. Those parties that she had been attending during her recent wild days that we talked about in part one, Ramon and Nathaniel attended them as well. Brianna was smoking pot during this time, which, you know, isn't incredibly shocking for a high schooler who isn't living at home and is partying a lot. But Brianna's experimentation with drugs went way beyond that. She told her friend Shauna that she had not only tried cocaine several times, but that she had also smoked crack.
Okay. So now we're getting into the more addictive, hardcore stuff.
Yeah. And the way Shauna described it on Disappeared is like she'd be at those parties and it would be around. And so she would try it. I know I'm not cool, but like those are absolutely not the parties I was at in high school.
Well, certainly not me either.
Now, these revelations, as they began to become public, certainly hurt Brianna's public reputation. Rumors started flying around that she was a drug addict who ran away to escape a drug debt, which you actually kind of like brought up in the last episode.
You know, why wouldn't she, if she ran away to escape a drug debt, why wouldn't she take her money?
Yeah, or her car or anything with her. I know.
But that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but both Brianna's family and friends said that while she may have made some poor choices, she was far from like a drug addict. She was working two jobs at the time of her disappearance and was finishing up her GED. So the idea that she was deep into this drug underworld was preposterous to them.
Even if she was deep into this drug underworld, it's not like she didn't exist as a human being. Like, if she goes missing, you still go looking for her.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, we see this all the time, right? It's like, well, they were doing drugs, don't worry about it.
Yeah, right.
This is just what happens.
She's a druggie. She made that choice.
Yeah, it's like the cost of doing business.
Yeah, which is all bullshit.
Of course. But, you know, it's what happens. But the fact remains that she was hanging out with people who were, to put it bluntly, into some pretty bad shit. So back to the tip.
Yep.
Police took it seriously. And on April 15th, they raided this farmhouse. And this is about 3 weeks after Brianna was reported missing. Police in the raid found large amounts of marijuana and cocaine inside, along with drug paraphernalia and handguns. But there was no sign of Brianna. All of the people who were in the house at the time admitted to knowing her, but denied any involvement in her disappearance. The four people there that day were all arrested, including Ramon and Nathaniel, as well as Timothy Powell, who lived in Berkshire, and Stephanie Machia, who also lived in Berkshire and was reportedly only 17 at the time.
So, I mean, okay, so it was a drug house.
Yeah. Absolutely. And all of these people did know Brianna, so it wasn't just some like wild tip that came out of nowhere.
Sure, but that tip could have had nothing to do with her disappearance, though.
Sure, but we have a whole part two.
All right.
That starts with this tip.
Okay. All right, let's get into it.
After they were released pending trial, Ramon and Nathaniel did not return to the farmhouse. Nathaniel went to an apartment that he shared with several other people in Burlington, Vermont, and Ramon went to an apartment that he sometimes shared with a woman named Ligia Ray Collins, a 26-year-old single mother. And this apartment was also in Burlington.
And I'm sorry, where is Burlington?
It's about 50 miles away.
50.
50, 50. So okay. This is like the furthest point in this story that were getting away.
Probably the furthest point in Vermont.
Perhaps. Yeah, I think it's north, but don't quote me on that. Sorry, Vermonters. On July 4th, so this raid happened April 15th. So less than 3 months later, Ligia disappeared from her apartment. Ramon Ryans was apparently the person who reported her missing. When police went to the apartment to interview Ramon, Stephanie Machia was also there.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. She said that she babysat for Ligia's two children. And she told detectives that a woman named Ellen Ducharme owed Ligia a couple hundred dollars or something like that, end quote. Around midnight on July 4th, Ellen called Ligia and said she had her money. Ligia said she was going to go there and pick it up, but she never returned. Burlington police detectives brought Ellen Ducharme in for an interview where she told them that Ligia and Ramon often sold her crack. She said that she didn't know where Ligia was, but that she did come over to her house around 2 a.m. on July 4th to sell her crack. Now, she says 2 a.m. on July 4th. I believe it's 2 a.m. on July 5th.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I think it's
the
just
night
getting,
of. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right? So, yeah. So, like, after she got the call, she went right over, right? Ellen said that while Ligia was at her house, Ramon called Ligia on her cell phone and began screaming at her to, quote, make the next delivery, end quote. She also told police that sometimes she also bought crack from some white girl named Stephanie. And police later determined that to be Stephanie Machia. Police then interviewed Ellen Ducharme's boyfriend, a 52-year-old man named Moses Robar. The day before all of this went down, on July 3rd, Moses was arrested and jailed for domestic assault against Ellen. As part of his pretrial conditions, he was ordered to stay away from Ellen. However, he admitted that he had been with her on July 6th and 7th when they traveled to Maine to go to a racetrack, kind of as like a reconciliation trip. He also said that he knew nothing about Ligia Collins or what happened to her. In a scene that echoed the one that had taken place a few months before in the farmhouse, police executed a search warrant at the apartment that Ramon had shared with Ligia. Inside, they found Ramon, along with a small amount of marijuana, a scale, $600 in cash, and a .22 caliber pistol. On July 12th, detectives went to the home where Moses Robar was staying. He wasn't there, but his father and brother were. They seized items of Moses' clothing, which had blood on them. Later that day, police spotted Moses in his vehicle. When they attempted to stop Robar and approach his white 1992 Chevrolet truck, he shot himself in the head. Moses Robar later died of his injuries.
Jesus. Okay.
The next day, police and FBI agents met with Ellen Ducharme at the Chittenden County Correctional Facility, where she was being held as a suspect in Ligia's disappearance. During this interview, she quickly broke down and admitted to murdering Ligia. She said that Ligia had come over that night and Ellen had accused her of breaking into the apartment and stealing Moses' gun. Ellen eventually took a baseball bat and struck Ligia several times in the back of the head. Ligia apparently fought back, even wrestling the bat away from her at one point, and Ellen eventually pushed her down the cellar stairs. Moses was reportedly in the living room during all of this and just laughed. Ellen then called a friend to come over and help her and Moses dispose of Ligia's body. The friend, Timothy Cruz, came over and he and Robar drove Ligia's body to Lincoln Gap, Vermont, where they dumped her in a deer camp in the Green Mountain National Forest.
There's a whole lot of names that you just threw out there and a whole lot of webs.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to get deeper into it.
Okay. I'm just having a hard time tracking.
Okay. Ramon was one of the people in the farmhouse,
yeah.
And he was friends with Brianna.
Yeah, got that.
After the farmhouse was raided, he went up to Burlington. He had an on-again, off-again thing with a woman named Ligia Collins. July 4th, Ligia goes missing. Ramon's the one who reports her missing. It all comes out eventually that two other people, a couple, Ellen and Moses, bought crack from Lygia and Ramon and Stephanie, who had also been in the farmhouse, apparently, and was also in Vermont babysitting Lygia's children. So they're all buying and selling crack together. Ellen and Lygia got into a fight late in the night. Ellen says that she bashed in Lygia's head basically with a baseball bat.
Right.
Lygia died. Moses and another person who we have not talked about up to this point, named Timothy Cruz, took her body to a national park and dumped it.
And where's Ramon?
Ramon.
He was just the
He was just
dealer.
Living with her, and he's the one who reported her missing. So according to Ellen's confession, like, Ramon had nothing to do with it.
Okay. And that's where we're at.
And that's where we're at. Okay. Well, except for the fact that Ellen had been arrested on suspicion of her death, and Moses, they were trying to find Moses. They found Moses. When they found him, he shot himself and then died. After his death, Ellen confessed everything.
Okay, so aside from Ramon, where's the connection with all of that?
Yeah, Ramon and Stephanie,
and
right?
Stephanie.
So we've got two people so far, right?
Okay.
Yes. So that's all we've got at this point.
Okay.
That's the only connection right now.
Okay.
So in older cases like this, I get a lot of use out of my newspapers.com account because I feel like going back to the beginning and seeing how a story is covered and what they're saying at the very beginning is enlightening. Over the years, a lot of details get left out in the retelling of a story like Brianna's. The affidavit where I've gotten most of the information about Lygia's murder was found by an investigative reporter back in 2007 and was published in the County Courier. It's credited to H.P. Albarelli Jr. and Jed Kettler. But before that, I found a Burlington Free Press article reporting on Lygia's disappearance in which it was mentioned that police were looking into a connection between her and Brianna. So basically, the first article that was written about Lygia's disappearance before Moses shot himself, before Ellen confessed, at the end of that article, it mentioned Brianna.
Okay.
So police immediately, assuming because Ramon, you know, was involved, were looking at this possibly being connected. Now, the first article also said that the suspect shot himself, but didn't name the suspect. I assumed that it was going to be Ramon Ryans. So I was shocked to see the next day's edition of the paper where they talk about a man and a woman who I had never heard of up to this point.
Uh-huh.
So to your question, other than the fact that another young woman whom Ramon Ryans knew went missing, like, what is the connection?
Right.
That's when we get to another man named Jorge Soto. Jorge Soto was an associate of Ramon Ryans and Nathaniel Jackson. Nathaniel Jackson was another man from the farmhouse who also ended up in Burlington after the police raid. After Ellen Ducharme's arrest for Lygia's murder, Ramon quietly left Vermont and went back to New York. Now, he may have been done with Vermont, but Vermont was not done with him. Authorities quickly put him on Vermont's 10 most wanted list because he failed to appear at a court hearing on the charges related to the Berkshire farmhouse raid. There was a $5,000 reward associated with Ramon, and on May 23rd, 2005, someone turned him in. He was extradited back to Vermont to face charges. Now, it's around this time that Jorge Soto enters the story. The Maitlands, during all of this, had been busy with their own investigation, and they had set up a website with information about Brianna's disappearance in the hope of garnering information. Several tips came in, including some regarding Jorge Soto. According to these tips, he had reportedly been bragging that he had killed Brianna. He was notorious in Richford, Vermont, not only for his drug connections, but for reportedly strangling a puppy with his bare hands at a party because its barking annoyed him.
Well, that's fucking awful.
Yeah. Police brought him in for an interview, and when he was asked about these claims regarding Brianna's murder, he said that it was just something he had made up to make him, quote, appear big and mean, end quote. However, after the interview, he reportedly continued to tell people that he was responsible for Brianna's death. So, like, he was going around to parties saying that he killed Brianna. Police are like, hey, we heard you've been going around to parties saying you killed Brianna. He's like, no, 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 that's just something I said, don't worry about it. Then he continued to go to parties and say he had killed Brianna.
Smart.
Yeah.
Smart move.
He even told a group of teenagers that he had buried her body in a St. Albans cornfield behind a house on Lake Street in which he had previously stayed. This could be a coincidence based on the fact that all these towns in Vermont are small and very close to each other. But this is something I didn't catch as I was writing it. It was only as we were recording episode one that I made this connection. St. Albans is the town that Brianna and her mother were shopping in
right
the afternoon of her disappearance, where she saw something or somebody outside in the parking lot and she was agitated and scared after she had gone out there.
Right.
So again, it might be a coincidence, but
no such thing as coincidences.
I disagree. But Jorge Soto did say that he had buried her in a St. Albans cornfield. And that was behind a house where he sometimes stayed. Now, the Maitlands have long maintained, and still do, to my knowledge, that it would have taken more than one person to forcibly abduct Brianna. Remember, she was trained in jiu-jitsu, so they believe that there had to have been several people involved. At this point in time, we have tips tying all three of these men to Brianna's death, and Ramon at least tangentially connected to one confirmed murder. They're waiting for police to connect the dots and to figure out what happened to their daughter. But that wasn't to be. When Ramon Ryans faced a judge in St. Albans, he pleaded guilty to possession of cocaine and marijuana and was sentenced to 45 days to 1.5 years with all but 45 days suspended. On top of that, the 45 days were erased due to time served, so Ramon walked out of that courtroom a free man. Which is pretty impressive for somebody who was on the Vermont's 10 most wanted list.
Yeah.
Now, he was able to do this because the state downgraded his charges from felonies to misdemeanors because Ramon spoke with Lieutenant Tom Nelson about Brianna. He was also given a polygraph related to Brianna's case. At first, police wouldn't divulge the results, but eventually said that they were inconclusive.
No, so weird.
Yeah. Others later stated that they showed deception.
Yeah, whatever.
Like, yeah.
I hold no stock in lie detector tests ever.
Ramon was never implicated in Lydia Collins' death, and officials in Burlington told reporters off the record that they didn't think the authorities in St. Albans even knew about his connection to her and probably didn't ask him anything about it.
Why would they?
He was living there, you know, he was the one who reported her missing, but again, somebody confessed and never said that he had anything to do with it.
Right. Not my monkey, not my circus.
Right. When the Maitlands found out that Ramon had been released, they were pretty pissed. Bruce told reporters, quote, "This guy made a mockery and a joke out of the police and the court system. From what I know, he gave the police nothing, absolutely nothing. He destroyed countless young lives in Vermont, and by sending him back out onto the streets, he'll keep right on doing it," end quote. Ramon at least left Vermont and reportedly returned to New York after this hearing.
Yeah, where NYPD can deal with him.
While Ramon may have left the state, the circle was not closed. Around this time, the Maitlands decided to hire a private investigator because they believed that law enforcement wasn't following up on leads aggressively enough in their daughter's case. And this is the same thing that Bruce has been saying basically since the beginning. Greg Overacker was a private investigator in New York. He happened to come across one of Brianna's missing posters, and it stuck with him because she reminded him of his own daughter. He eventually contacted the Maitlands and offered his services in exchange for mileage and phone charges. Greg traveled to Vermont and spent a week interviewing various people associated with Brianna. Over the course of those interviews, one incident kept popping up. A party in Richford the night Brianna disappeared. He kept getting different stories, but what they had in common was that something terrible happened to Brianna there. Some claimed she overdosed. Others said she was killed. Several said that they had heard she had been buried at a farm in Franklin County. Now, I just want to say, Franklin County is where St. Albans is located, which is where Jorge Soto claimed to have buried Brianna in a cornfield. So, like, that all could have been kind of the same thing. But it should be said that Richford is also in Franklin County.
Gotcha.
This is when Greg Overacker connected with H.P. Alberelli Jr., the investigative reporter I mentioned earlier. The pair compared notes and decided to combine resources. That's when they first heard about a statement that had been given to the Burlington police about a month prior. Eventually, they tracked down the statement, which was put into an affidavit by the officer who spoke with the witness. So now we're back up in Burlington.
Okay.
This affidavit was done by a uniformed officer who was called to a home in Burlington on an unrelated matter, like nothing to do with Brianna's case whatsoever. This home belonged to a woman named Debbie Gorton and her three children. The children must have been adults because police were there to arrest one of her sons.
Oh, okay.
While they were in the process of doing that, Debbie became agitated and shouted at the officers that if they arrested her son, then she wouldn't testify against her sister.
Who the fuck is her sister?
Well, that's what the officers were wondering, I'm sure. They're like, okay. Like,
okay, don't testify against your sister. I don't know who the hell your sister is.
Exactly. But then she also started shouting things about Brianna Maitland. So the officer, I'm guessing, had heard of Brianna's case by this point. So he asked to speak to Debbie in private. She agreed, and the officer recorded their conversation.
Smart police officer.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw that out there.
Now, I don't know if Overacker ever heard the actual recording, but he did manage to get a hold of the affidavit that the officer created based on this conversation. Okay, so who is Debbie Gorton and what does she have to do with Brianna Maitland? So that sister she told police she wouldn't testify against? That was Ellen Ducharme, who knows Ramon Ryans and was currently awaiting trial for the murder of Lygia Collins. According to Debbie, Ellen told her exactly what happened to Brianna. According to Ellen, Ramon Ryans killed Brianna along with her boyfriend, Moses Robar, and their friend, Timothy Cruz. Now, remember, when Ellen admitted to killing Lygia, she said that Moses and Timothy were the ones who dumped her body.
Right.
Debbie told the officer, quote, that as a parent, she would want Brianna's body found, but insisted that no one would find it, end quote. Now, I don't have a copy of the full affidavit, so I'm unclear as to whether she's claiming that Brianna was murdered on March 19th, the night she disappeared, or sometime after that day. But she says that at one point, Brianna's body was in Ellen's basement and that they transported her body in a truck to a farm where they cut her into pieces.
Jeez Christ. But that does line up with some of the rumors that have been circulating.
Exactly.
And some of the tips that came in.
Yep. Debbie said that Ellen had witnessed the murder, and Debbie speculated that Moses had shot himself when confronted by police, not just because of Lygia's murder, but because he had been involved in Brianna's as well. So I've obviously thrown a lot at you.
Yep.
So let's talk about it.
Okay.
First, let's talk about this alleged party in Richford. My main issue with that story is the timing.
Yes. The timing. And that's why I was asking about where it was. And
yeah, it honestly doesn't matter where it was, because even sure, if
everything,
it was
everything, like, is close together.
Right. But even if it was like literally a mile away, Brianna didn't leave work on March 19th until 11:20. And her car was seen at the Dutchburn house about an hour later.
Right.
That is an incredibly short period of time for her to go to a party, either overdose or, yeah, be murdered, and then have someone drive her car
and
to an abandoned house and stage an accident, right?
Right.
Like, again, I don't care if the party was right next door. Like, that's still an insanely short period of time.
Yeah, it doesn't add up.
No. In terms of Debbie Gorton's story, it sounds extremely similar to what happened to Lygia Collins.
Right.
Lygia's murder was less than 4 months after Brianna's disappearance. Did this same group of people really murder two young women in similar ways that close together? Also, why and how was Brianna in Burlington which is about 50 miles away from where she disappeared. Beyond that, it doesn't make sense to me why they would have taken the time to cut Brianna up, but then just dumped Lygia's body a few months later.
Right. Not to call them serial killers or anything like that, but typically murderers, let's just say, they don't typically go back on their tactics.
Right. Like you generally get better, right? Unless you're interrupted or, you know, something like that. But that doesn't seem to be the case. They had plenty of time.
Right.
You know,
so if you took the time on murder one to cut the body up and hide it so that nobody finds it.
Right.
Why would you then just be like, beep?
Yeah. On number
and
two.
Fucking yeet the body.
Yeah.
On number two. The timing just doesn't. That's the big sticking point for me. The timing just doesn't work out. Like you said before, like there's just.
Well, I mean, for a party that night on Friday night, it certainly doesn't.
Yeah.
Her car was seen way too soon.
Right. So in order for this to actually happen, somebody had to have been waiting for her to leave work. They follow her when she leaves work, coax her off the side of the road one way or the other, whether it's forcing her car off by hitting it and it drives into the abandoned house, or getting her to stop on the side of the road and then abducting her and then staging the accident and taking her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, none of this makes any sense. The timing just doesn't add up to me with when people saw her car, tracing it back to when she left her work. There's just not enough time.
Right. But I have another theory that I'm going to get to at the end.
Okay.
So Greg Overacker is still working with the Maitland family and can sometimes be found on the Brianna Maitland Facebook page. He and another investigator who's an admin on the page have said recently that they basically discounted Debbie's story, like that entire affidavit, saying that she's not reliable. I tend to agree, but there are a few things that bother me, and they all center around Ramon Ryans and Moses Robar. Okay, this is where we get into the spider web.
We haven't already? Jesus. Like, I already feel like there's like a million strings on the board.
This is why when you kept on coming to my office when I was writing this, I was like, I'm not done. Because this is what I was doing. All right, let's break this down. Nathaniel Jackson, Ramon Ryan, and Stephanie Machia all knew Brianna. Those are three of the four people who are in that farmhouse.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. The fourth one, we never hear from again. He apparently was just there. He never shows up again in the story.
Okay. So it's Ramon,
Nathaniel,
Stephanie. And Stephanie.
All right. Now, Ramon and Nathaniel were both from New York, and they're believed to be cousins.
Okay.
But I'm not entirely sure of that. Regardless, they knew each other from New York. They came to Vermont together. They all knew Brianna, along with Stephanie. At least Ramon and Stephanie knew Lygia Collins. Nathaniel could have, because he also went to Burlington, but I don't know that for sure. So let's just say Stephanie and Ramon knew Lygia Collins. Ramon, Stephanie, and Lygia all knew Ellen Ducharme and likely Moses Robar. Ramon, Ellen, and Moses knew Timothy Cruz, and at least Ramon knew Jorge Soto. Within this group of people who have all been accused of being involved in Brianna's death one way or another, two things stick out to me. One is that Ramon Ryans is the common thread between every single one of them. And two is Moses Robar's truck.
Is it a white pickup?
All the way back in part one, toward the beginning of that episode, I mentioned early rumors that the Maitlands had heard about Brianna's disappearance. That information came from a Burlington Free Press article that was published on April 4th, 2004. This was 11 days before the raid on the farmhouse, but likely after Ramon Ryan's name had come up in the investigation. In this article, it says, quote, "They've been told of a white pickup truck seen parked down the road the night Brianna Maitland disappeared," end quote. The farmhouse raid happened 11 days later. Ramon Ryans was arrested, and then he went to Burlington to stay with Lygia Collins. Less than 3 months later, Lygia Collins is murdered, and Ellen Ducharme confesses to the killing. While she takes responsibility, she says that Moses Robar was present during the murder, and along with Timothy Cruz, he disposed of Lygia's body. Prior to her confession, Ellen and Moses were already suspects in Lygia's murder. Police went to Moses' home but didn't find him. They found him in his vehicle, a white 1992 Chevrolet pickup truck. Moses then shot himself. Debbie Gorton, Ellen's sister, told police that Ramon Ryans killed Brianna and he, Timothy Cruz, and Moses Robar used a truck to dispose of her body. Now, I know pickup trucks aren't exactly rare, and white pickup trucks aren't exactly rare. And if you're disposing of a body, it seems like a pretty logical vehicle to use. But there are just too many connections, in my opinion, for none of this to have anything to do with Brianna going missing.
It's an intricate web, but it's theory.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I don't think that any of the stories or theories that I've laid out is exactly what happened to Brianna. But what if they all have pieces of the truth?
Sure.
After the raid on the farmhouse, Brianna's roommate Jillian said that she had met Nathaniel Jackson about 5 weeks prior to Brianna's disappearance when she brought him to the house. Several people told police that Nathaniel, Ramon, and Brianna had been seen together on numerous occasions, mainly at parties, but clearly not only at parties. Early in the investigation, Brianna's mother, Kelly, said that she believed Brianna's abductor crashed her car into the house. But in the episode of Disappeared, which was filmed several years later, she had a different theory. She said that she believed Brianna was out at the Dutch Burn house because she was meeting someone.
So then how did her car end up in the or half in the Dutch Burn's house?
Well, Kelly believes that she went out there to meet someone. Something went wrong. Who knows what? But that Brianna tried to get away, but in her haste, backed into the house and the car became stuck on the foundation. She was then forcibly removed from the car.
Works in theory.
So what if she was meeting Ramon? And what if Ramon was with Moses Robar in his white truck that night? And what if Jorge Soto was bragging about killing Brianna not because he killed Brianna, but because his friend Ramon had told him the story about how he had killed her? Like, in a twisted way, it was stolen valor.
Yeah, I can see that.
They could have taken her up to Burlington alive and then killed her, or something went wrong at the Dutch Burn house and they killed her then, panicked, and then took her up to Burlington where they hid her in Ellen's basement while they decided what to do. Now, as you said, this is all conjecture. It's all theory, obviously. But the white truck bothers me.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I agree. I mean, I don't believe in coincidences, and
I do, but this is too many. This is too many for me.
Right.
And I'm sorry, like the fact that there's a random two sentences in a newspaper article from April 4th that mentions a tip about a white truck.
Right.
And then 3 months later, Moses Robar is found and then kills himself in a white truck.
Right. And there's connections to all of this.
And there's connections between all of these people.
Right.
All centering around Ramon Ryans. Like, I'm sorry. I just don't feel like all of that is unrelated.
No, I agree with you. I still don't see the motive, but
I don't either. I don't. Again,
but
I
maybe that's not something we'll ever find out.
Right. Because I don't think we know the full extent of Brianna's relationship with these people. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that she knew Ramon and Nathaniel. We don't know how close she was actually with them. We don't know if she had ever met Moses. Like,
but we do know that they all ran in the same circle.
Exactly.
And there's the white truck and the tip. And she goes missing. So who knows what the motive actually was? Who knows what actually happened with her car that night? Who knows what the circumstances are?
And that's why the Brianna Maitland case is a mystery that has remained alive for two decades. There have been scores of theories and sightings. And in 2006, security footage showed a woman who looked remarkably like Brianna gambling at the Caesars Casino in Atlantic City. Now, the footage wasn't the best, but like they showed it on Disappeared and it definitely looks like her. So you see, again, like the strip club in Boston, like it's right. A tip that 100% made sense.
Sure.
But a media company was able to clean up the footage. And once her parents looked at it, they're like, oh, yeah, that's obviously not her.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a credible sighting at the time. Serial killer Israel Keyes was also suspected briefly of killing Brianna as he had been operating in the area at the time of her disappearance. However, by 2012, the FBI had ruled him out in this case. Over the last 20 years, Vermont State Police have continued to work on Brianna's case. In 2020, one of the items that had been found near Brianna's wrecked car was sent in to see if it contained DNA. A DNA profile was extracted, but as it was an item around the car, investigators didn't know if it was actually related to Brianna's case.
Unless the profile matches some of the other players.
Well, exactly. So the profile was entered into CODIS, which is the FBI's DNA database, where it was compared to the DNA profiles of 11 persons of interest. But there was no match. They didn't give up, though. The profile was then sent to Authorm Labs, where they were able to use genetic genealogy to narrow down the search for the DNA donor. Three people were interviewed, and their DNA was taken. One sample matched the original profile. Unfortunately, that didn't end up being a slam dunk in this case. In 2022, Vermont State Police Detective Sergeant Angela Baker, who by that point was the case's lead investigator, told reporters, quote, "It's important to note that this doesn't mean we have identified a suspect. We are continuing our active efforts to investigate every lead associated with this case, and we constantly look for new technological advances to aid in our investigation. The use of genetic genealogy to identify the DNA found 18 years ago is just one example of how detectives continue to track down every potential lead in this case," end quote. Earlier this week, as we record this, March 19th, 2024, marked 20 years since Brianna Maitland was last seen. On that day, FBI and Vermont State Police held a joint press conference in which they announced a $40,000 reward for information leading to Brianna's recovery. FBI agent Craig Tremaroli said at the conference, quote, "Someone out there may have information that can help solve this case. It's been too long and it's time to come forward," end quote. We don't have the answers. I've got theories, but we don't have the answers. But there are people out there who do. Moses Robar is dead, but some of the other names surrounding the story are still out there. In 2006, Ellen Ducharme was sentenced to 25 years to life for the murder of Lygia Collins. Timothy Cruz was sentenced to 7 years for his role as an accessory. As of 2021, he was still around Burlington committing petty crimes at 60 years old. Stephanie Machia seems to have left Vermont and stayed out of trouble. As for Ramon, Nathaniel, and the rest, I couldn't find any more press mentions of them, nor did I find any additional criminal information, so I'm really not sure what happened after about 2006. The Maitlands moved out of Vermont in the months after Brianna's disappearance. Like Polly Klass's father before him, Bruce Maitland turned his pain into action. He founded Private Investigations for the Missing, a nonprofit that aims to provide families of missing people with qualified private investigators at no cost to them. They also have a podcast called Missing. Missing premiered in 2015 and covered the case of Maura Murray. Today, it continues to cover the stories of missing people, homicides, and injustices. As I mentioned before, Greg Overacker, the private investigator, continues to work with the Maitland family. In 2023, he published a book about Brianna's case called The Hunt for Brianna Maitland, The Restless Pursuit of Answers to One of Vermont's Biggest Mysteries. You can find the link to purchase it in our show notes. Even though Brianna hasn't been seen in 20 years, no one has given up on finding answers in her case. As Colonel Matthew Birmingham of the Vermont State Police said at the recent press conference, quote, "This is not a cold case. It's an unsolved case," end quote. Brianna Maitland has been missing from Montgomery, Vermont since March 19, 2004. She is a white female with brown hair and hazel eyes. She has a faint scar from her left eyebrow to her forehead. She has a nose ring in her left nostril. At the time of her disappearance, she was between 5'3" and 5'5" and approximately 105 to 118 pounds. She was 17 when she went missing. She would be 37 today. Anyone with information regarding Brianna Maitland's disappearance should contact Vermont State Police at 802-524-5993. You can also contact the FBI tip line at 1-800-CALL-FBI or at tips.fbi.gov. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!